Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique. And your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello there, welcome to another Rahala Stapad this week with Michael Sheen. Will it be Nish Kumar? Will it be Michael Sheen? There's only one way to find out, and that is to watch or listen to this week's podcast. We're on tour at the moment. I would really love it if you came along to see me live. Go to richtown.com/gigs to find out all the amazing places we are coming to. There's Glasgow coming up, there's Hull, there's Sheffield, but there's other ones before, Liverpool, I'm sure, and with fantastic guests. The guests will be all announced at richherring.com/rahelaspata/tour or rahelaspata.co.uk as well. You can go there. Why not become a member and you'll get the guest information before everyone else? Go to gofasterstripe.com/badges and you get a lovely membership pack as well. Don't forget about that, my fan friends. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy this amazing interview with the... I'm slightly in love with him and I want to marry him, but I don't think he's going to. It's Michael Faheen. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to King's Place. Please welcome a man who's come back from holiday in Devon for this. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello, we're starting. We're not doing anything. We're not doing any pre-go show. This is straight it. With no clapping board. Welcome to King's Place. I've been on holiday. I'm going back on holiday tomorrow. This feels very surreal. Also, our first guest went to the Leicester Square Theatre. So, I might be filling for a little while. We may talk about it with him. Welcome to Richard Herring's Large Size Tinkly Tonk podcast, which is... Yeah, call that because Andy McCaich, who's in the front row here, tweeted me to say that the publicity for the King's Place this week had me as music, and the picture on the website was, or in the brochure, was of a grand piano on the stage. So I've decided to take that as a calling. I can't really play. I've got grade 2 piano, so I reckon I could give it a go. So we're going to wheel out the tinkly tonk, as I call it, just... fit in with it. Anyway, no, but I was hanging out at Arlington Court and the National Trust Carriage Museum near Barnstable yesterday on my holiday. And a man dressed up as a stagecoach driver, he said it's Rahulastapa. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. Yeah, I have been on holiday. It's so strange. And it's been fun. I've been this week, actually, before I went on holiday, I was with my daughter. I picked my daughter up from the nursery, and it was a nice sunny day. And as we went out the school, her friends were playing on a bank by the school. She said, "Daddy, Dad, can I go and roll on the bank?" I said, "Yeah, yeah, fine, off you go." And then so she was rolling around. They were all happy. She's 4 years old. So she's not 28 years old like you were imagining. And she was rolling around, a lot of fun. And said, "Daddy, Daddy, do you want to go?" And I said, "Yeah, why not?" And without thinking, I went and rolled down the bank of grass, which was an incredible experience. It's been a long time since I've rolled down. A, when you're 51 years old, like I am, your arms really get in the way, which I don't remember happening as a child. B, you go incredibly fast. I went much faster than a four-year-old due to my increased density. And it was, I got incredibly dizzy and also thought, as I was falling, I thought, oh, fuck, I can probably really hurt myself. I could break a hip doing this. It was incredible. It's better than any drugs I've been on in my life, which is no drugs. And I do recommend it. And on holiday, she's very adventurous, which I'm not. And we've been climbing trees out by the beach in where we are in Woolacombe. It's lovely out there. Do go and stay there. I've been climbing trees with her. It's been insane. But before we went on holiday, we just had some workmen doing some work in our garden. And my daughter had planted this sunflower seed in the garden, in this little plant. And they didn't know, really. They just thought it was a weed. And they chucked all their stuff on top of it and literally destroyed it. And my wife is going, oh, this is so... She's been tending to this plant so carefully. As a father, I'll do anything for love. So I went to the local garden centre to see if I could buy another sunflower plant. And they didn't have anything. It was like a tiny sapling. And so I came back with quite a well-grown sunflower. And I thought, if we can just string this out so it doesn't look in the garden until we get back from holiday, this might work. So I planted this sunflower, and it was working until half an hour before we went on holiday. She went out in the garden. She came to me and said, "Daddy, Daddy, something's happened." I said, "Why don't you go?" She said, "Look, it's my sunflower's not there." I said, "It's there." She said, "No, it was over there." So she remembered. It was like literally within about 6 inches where she... So I said, "Oh yeah, we had to move that when the men were working, but that's just grown. It's grown really well, hasn't it?" And she went, "She knew. She's 4 years old. It's a weird thing lying to a child. I just didn't know. She's going to cry a lot in her lifetime. I just thought if I can just spare her one tear, that would be. That's just sparing one as a father. You want to do it. It's a place of love, but it is lying to your own child. And she realised it was a lie, and it's probably mentally scarred her for life. So that is a terrible thing to look out for. So hopefully our guest is settled and out of the toilet now. What I was generally going to do was I had Nish Kumar, who you may remember, stood in for this. The last time this person couldn't come. I mean, he got to the Leicester Square Theatre this time, so he's either very early or very late, wasn't he? So I was going to get Nish to come out. I was going to introduce our guest, and then Nish was going to come out, and we're going to pretend he was the guest. But Nish is sick. It's such a shame. So there, Nish couldn't make it to this one. It's sort of weird. It's a weird symmetry. I said, I like the poetry of that, Nish. Sorry you're ill, but it's good. Sorry, Vincent. Anyway, my guest this week, he's probably best known as the voice of the Fatones on... Yeah. One person. On Richard Herring's Stone Clearing with Richard Herring podcast. Will you please welcome... Hopefully he's here. It's Mr. Michael Sheen, ladies and gentlemen. He's here, he's here. He's here.
I made it.
There's some people there.
Sneak attack.
We're in the round. We're literally in the round. They can throw fruit pastels from every direction here.
I know.
As we're talking backstage.
I didn't hear what you...
Voice of the Stones. You're the voice of the Stones on my Stone Clearing podcast.
I mean, must... All four of the Rolling Stones, I do the voice of them.
It must have been so exciting when you got the news. I would like to help out actors. And I knew that I had a direct message.
It was a tough audition process.
And I said, would you like to be the voice of the Stones? How did it feel when you got that job?
I was elated.
Yeah.
I was absolutely elated. When I got the certificate with the wax seal on it that you get when you get a part, I was very, very excited.
And did you do any preparation for it? Because it didn't really sound like it.
I spent 6 months living in a quarry.
Yeah.
And I worked as a stonemason apprentice.
It was a secret for a while it was you, and hardly anyone guessed that it was you.
Yeah, no one really cared.
No one really listens to the podcast, so it's...
No.
It's a shame. I want to apologise to you. I'll get this out of the way first of all. I've met you once before in Machynlleth.
Machynlleth, yes.
The festival in Machynlleth, fantastic festival. And you're at the bar. Oh, hello. There's a... We're being heckled by a bee. It might be mine, I guess.
Is that my agent going, Michael, what are you doing now?
Which theatre are you at?
How much faster can you slide?
I'm going to turn my phone off in the hope that...
Or was it you?
It might be me.
Well, it might be me as well.
It didn't happen last week.
Sorry,
you know.
I forgot. I'm going to put it on airplane mode.
Well, I don't know if that'll work.
I just made that up. And I just thought of that. Someone must have done that before.
They must have. Oh, I don't know if they have. My wife's got a joke, which is I put my plane on airplane settings and it's told me to stop calling it Shirley. That's my wife's joke about...
That's a thinker. That is good. Do you mind if I take my jacket
don't
off?
Don't take them off. I did warn you it would be warm and I'm committed to this jumper, so it's in the poster and everything.
Fair play to you. Why are there people behind... Hello. God bless you. But what's going on there?
Is it a good view up there?
Is it just so full?
Yeah, is it all right?
Wow. Yeah. I feel I've been known for doing good acting with my back. So I'm going to be very expressive.
Most people are in front of us. I don't think we have to worry too much about those losers who bought their tickets late is what happened to those. But let's mainly concentrate on the people up here. I met you at the bar, and I'd just been out eating a hot dog on my own. I was quite lonely that year in Machynlleth. You know, it's difficult to be friends with. You don't know who you can be friends with.
Yeah.
It's a very friendly place. And you were at the bar, and I was very excited to see Michael Sheen. And I shook your hand and I had tomato ketchup all over my hand. And it was quite a sticky shape. And then I bought a drink, and then when I sort of turned around to sort of see if I could talk to you more, the circle around you had closed so that I couldn't talk to you. So I didn't get a chance to apologise for that. So
there's been too many grubby-fingered comedians in my life. So I now have special,
you do have a special
ninjas to stop it.
Little wink.
Yeah.
And people know.
No, I remember... It's funny because I remember meeting you. I don't remember the tomato ketchup.
Do you not? Okay.
But I just remember, because I was quite starstruck.
Were you?
Yeah. I was big fan. Been a big fan for a long time.
I don't get starstruck. Well, I do get starstruck by proper celebrities, right? But I'm very... I don't meet many of them on here. I was very starstruck, but I was very excited to meet you. You and John Sim are the two most exciting people I've ever met.
No, in real life.
It is. And John, when John Sim was in some radio studios when we came in, I went...
I met recently that I was very overwhelmed by was, do you know Laurie Anderson?
Yes.
Laurie Anderson, the brilliant performer, she's a true artist.
Yeah.
And when I was 11, I think, 10 or 11, do you remember that song, Oh Superman? It drove everybody mad. I loved it. It had a profound effect on my life. And it was one of the first singles I ever bought, nice. I think. It became a hit. How did that song become a hit? Here come the planes. They're American planes. It's so weird. And but it became a hit for a time. And I loved it. And I went out and bought the single. And ever since, it's been a big thing in my life. I've loved it. I made my daughter listen to it. Drove her mad. I loved it. So I'm in New York a few months ago. And... this is quite a name-droppy story.
Okay, that's fine.
So, I don't know if you've heard of the Velvet Underground, but John Cale invited me to this exhibition. It was opening there, and he's Welsh, so we all know each other. And and he invited me to this exhibition, so I went along, marvellous. And I thought, well, I'll just go and say hello to John before I leave. And he had, like, loads of people around him. And I made sure I didn't have any tomato ketchup on my
hands. Yeah, let's always do that. Watch
Check your hands first, always. And then and I went up to John, and I was having a little chat with John. And then Laurie Anderson comes up. Obviously, was with Lou Reed, and, you know, she came up. So she was there. And I saw her, and I was just like, oh, my God. Going on in my head. And I thought, this is probably the only time I will ever meet Laurie Anderson. And I just said, hello. Oh, Superman had a profound effect on my life. And she just went... thanks, and walked off. And John Cale took... And I went, oh, God. And John went, well, you did better with her than I did. And, for the first time, I thought, oh, that's what it's like when people come up and do that to you, you know? And I thought, well, it was the only time I was going to see her. At least, you know, it was important. Sometimes it's more important to you, isn't it, than it is to them. And so I... But I, that is fairly humiliating, though.
Yeah.
It was like when I got to interview David Lynch once for a radio show that I did, and I went to his studio in L.A. Oh, I'm a huge... He's my favourite director. And he... And I went up to the studio to meet him where I was going to do the interview, and his, like, assistant engineer, studio engineer, Dean, was there, and Dean said, I'll just go and get David. And he came up, and he had... He looked like David Lynch. And he had, like, you know, his shirt done up and a jacket on, and he had, like, modelling clay over him and, like, sculpture dust and a little roll-up cigarette in the corner of his mouth, and his hair was all over the place. And he just looked like an artist. And anyway, I do this interview with him, and I'm resisting gushing at any point. And then at the end, I thought, I might never meet him again. I said, David, on behalf... of everyone that has been affected by your work. And I just, I could hear myself, and a little voice was going, shut up, Michael, shut up! You are really fucking this up! And I couldn't help myself, and I just, you know, you've really affected my life.
Yeah. And they must nice. Like, even if they hear it a lot, they must still like it.
Well, if people, and they do very rarely, but if someone comes up to me and says, like, that you know, something I've done has had a big effect. I mean, it's lovely. Yeah. You might not quite know where to put your hands,
yeah.
But you know, it is lovely. Yeah. I don't mean that in a weird way. You know, you get a bit awkward. You don't quite know what to do with your face. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I imagine it's like that. I imagine that. Looking forward to that happening.
In that jumper.
So, look, there's loads of things I want to talk to you about, and then some of them won't be the normal things, as you may be aware. You're such a fan of the podcast, you went to the wrong venue.
Yes. It's in the name of the podcast.
Not anymore, Grandad. Get with it. This is Rehellastapa now.
I thought...
Thank you, well done.
I thought I was being so, like, clever and funny. So, Richard had said, when you're 5 minutes away, just text me, let me know. So I'm, like, walking through Leicester Square, and I text him, hi, Richard. Nish Kumar here, 5 minutes away. And I'm walking in, and I say, hi, I'm here for the show. And the lovely lady who was ushering there said, right, where's your ticket? And I thought, I'm a minor celebrity. That's a very cold reception. I said, no, I'm... No. I'm in the show. And she said... Really? And I could see her brain not processing it. I thought, why would that be so weird? She said, so you're on the show with Frank? And it was at that point I started to worry. And then I realised, and then they said, oh, Richard's show. Where's Richard Herring doing the show tonight? And at that point I thought, live from Blackpool, it's Richard Herring. Fuck! So I got in a cab and whizzed my way in.
We're near enough. Right, yeah. First thing I want to talk to you about is War of the Worlds. You've recently done an audio drama. I mean, I was quite confused by this War of the Worlds. Yeah, I mean, I thought you were redoing the Richard Burton.
I was.
But you weren't, because there were no songs in it. Where were the songs?
Right.
And there was loads more, like, sound effects of tinkling, drinking tea, and there was... And, like, loads more story. And I thought, there's more acting and stuff than I remembered.
I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
Does it begin with me saying, no one would have believed? Does it?
I can't even remember.
It does? And at the end of that speech, does it go, dun, dun, dun?
It does.
So as far as I'm concerned, I was doing that version.
Well, I'll tell you why it's definitely not the version. Because I listened to the whole thing to hear how you delivered one line.
Yeah.
And you did not deliver the line.
What was the line?
Which is when... Richard Burton, in The War of the Worlds, meets the artilleryman, played by David Essex.
Yes, David Essex is not in this.
We're going to build a new world, underground. He has to do that first of all.
He does.
Which is more or less in there.
In a brave new world!
And then Richard Burton looks at what he's dug and says, I could have dug that much in a day. I was looking to see whether you would...
I deliver it with
the same contempt as if Richard Burton's main emphasis was, yeah, I could have done that easily. That was pathetic. Not like, this is a stupid idea.
I could have done that in a day, you earringed pseudo-gypsy.
So I was very upset to listen to 5 hours of that to find that didn't happen.
No, I don't say that. I don't say that. But no, it is. It's so I, as well as, funnily enough, as well as Laurie Anderson's Another thing that had a profound effect on me around that age was Jeff Wing's War of the Worlds.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I loved it. My cousin Hugh, who was about 5 years older than me and therefore a god, introduced me to War of the Worlds and Jerry Rafferty and Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
So I've always associated those three things. War of the Worlds, oh, the double album, the sleeve, the illustrations, all that. Oola. Do you know this album? Am I? No.
Doesn't matter if they know or not. We're mainly talking about this.
Yeah. The whole show.
Yep.
I'm going to do the second half of it for the last three quarters now. I've loved it. And so, again, grew up with it, listened to it all the time, plagued my daughter with it, the whole thing. And then I get a message. My agent sends me a message. I think it might have been the same day as I got the Stones job. She said, Michael, Jeff Wayne's been in touch. Do you want to do a new version of War of the Worlds? I said, I'm in. And so I went to Jeff Wayne's studio and we did the whole thing. But he wasn't allowed to do the actual songs.
Right.
I think because they're owned by someone else.
Oh, really?
But he had, but all the music from it, and then they kind of they put more drama into it because it's for Audible. So it's slightly more drama. Taron Egerton.
Yes.
Rocket Man plays David Essex. Playing the artilleryman. Yeah. Adrian Edmondson.
I didn't realise until afterwards I looked and
he's in it.
Really good.
And I get to do the Richard Burton bit. Yeah. So I go to Jeff Wayne's studio, and one day he said to me, because he knew how much I'm such a fan, that when we had to do a little bit of a like interview, behind the scenes interview on camera, I started crying. I can see a pattern here. I said, oh, this album has had such an effect on my life. And I actually started crying in front of Jeff Wayne. Yeah. But he knew I was such a fan. So that he said, I've got all the original recordings here. And he did that thing. Do you ever watch classic albums? Have you ever seen those documentary shows, classic albums? They used to be on Netflix. I don't know if they still are. I've watched all of them. I love that format. Where someone is sitting at a big mixing desk talking about, when we isolated mix vocals, there was, some engineers there, and you sort of listen to all the individual bits. Jeff did that for me with War of the Worlds. So I knew that album inside out, and he just started playing individual bits. And then he even played me a bit of Richard Burton in the booth going, do you want it a bit faster, Jeff? That kind of, a bit slower, a bit more dramatic. It was amazing, amazing.
Well, I'd recently listened to David Tennant, who does the audio book.
Who's that?
He's the Scottish you. He does the... he does the audio book of War of the Worlds.
Does he?
Just come out. Yeah, so I'd listened to that, and it's an amazing story. And then I thought, well, I'd better listen to Michael Sheen doing...
He never mentioned that.
And so I was very...
And he's my lover.
I was extremely familiar with it. It's interesting, on audiobooks, there's quite a few H.G. Wells ones altogether. It's worth getting, and I'm going to say this for free to those, but some people on Acast get paid for publicising this. I'm doing this for free. It's a very good... H.G. Wells books are amazing. I know you've played H.G. Wells as well. Really, way ahead of the time.
Yeah.
And when you're a kid, you read them one way, and then an adult, you read them another way. It's a great book. Can't remember where I was going with that, but I do...
Some people believe that he invented the internet.
Right. They're incorrect.
Because
he was a writer.
Yeah, no, he wasn't.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
But he came up with this idea of a constantly updated encyclopedia. So the idea of something that retained information that was constantly being updated all the time.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Well, he's amazingly ahead of his time. What I like about the Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds is that it retains my favourite bit, which is that the journalist or whatever is learning to ride a bike on the week that the aliens come. That really places it in 1895 when the bike was invented. But Jeff Wayne, some of it's a bit camp, I have to say, Jeff Wayne's version. I'm going to go that far.
How dare you?
But he vastly improves the War of the Worlds by making the wife figure or girlfriend figure part of the story rather than the brothers useless. It's a stupid bit of the book.
Yeah.
But that's what I was going to say. Great. David Tennant, some people, when they're reading an audiobook, it says, read by Sophie What's-Face. It has her name, probably. But David Tennant's performed performed by David.
David doesn't read a book.
Yeah, he's performing.
David doesn't act a book. David performs a book.
But I highly recommend War of the Worlds in all its formats.
I think as War of the Worlds come out of copyright or something recently, because there are fucking millions. There's really loads of versions of it.
Yeah.
There's two TV versions. There's the one we did, there's fucking Tenant.
Yeah. They've done. Someone sent me a link because I've been writing about War of the Worlds a lot on my blog, and someone sent me a link to there's an interactive War of the Worlds. Has anyone been to this interactive War of the Worlds or 3D experience where you get shot by Martians? No?
Wow.
That's come out as well. Jeff Wayne's, you know, he's. Well, Jeff Wayne's getting a little bit of.
Oh, a little bit of cheese. he does a big live show. Have you seen the big live show? I haven't seen that yet.
We had Ricky Wilson on the other week who played the artilleryman in one of the live shows. That's not going out, that podcast. So it's, but it did give me the chance to do my I Could Have Dug That Much in a Day routine again, which Chris Evans will be happy about.
There is a interesting little, very niche subgenre of films or stories, which is people who ultimately end up writing a story or making a film about the destruction of their hometown.
Right.
H.G. Wells is one,
right?
Because the area that gets decimated is where he grew up.
That's what I love about it. It's all Chobham. And it's just like all these, like the aliens, and they've all fucking landed in Chobham.
In Chobham.
Because
that's where they would go. That's exactly where they would go. And another one in that subgenre is Hot Fuzz, Edgar Wright.
Oh, yes.
Which he filmed in his hometown because he wanted to just trash the place.
Yeah.
There must be loads of other ones, but I don't know anymore.
Yeah, that's good.
Have you ever seen a UFO?
It's a good question. We'll stick that in. I have not. Have you ever seen one?
I believe I have.
Okay, good. Was that?
I think, as well as Chobham.
Yeah.
This is what made me think of it, because I was thinking, yeah, Chobham, aliens would go there. I think Port Talbot, where I come from, is on some weird alien map.
Yeah.
It's like some sort of stop-off. It's like a lay-by. It's like the Little Chef
of
the galaxy. Because when we moved into the house where my mum and dad still live and where I grew up, we moved there when I was about 8. The lady who lived next door, we live on a, I call it a mountain, other people say it's a hill. We live on a mountain, and at that point, no one had built beyond our street, so there was just mountain, hill. And the lady who lived next door, who was a very respectable lady, she wasn't someone who would make up stories, she told us that one morning she was in the kitchen, which overlooked the back garden mountain, and she said she was standing there making a coffee, and a flying saucer came down, hovered over her back garden, and then went. And, of course, you just think that's nonsense, but she was a very serious lady. So when I grew up, I always used to question that. It was like a weird thing that someone had told me, and I never kind of explained it. And one day I was coming home from school, and I'm walking up. I got off the school bus, and I was walking up my street, and I was about to turn up the path to my house, I have a view of the side of the mountain next to our mountain. And coming round that mountain, as she comes, was lights, this, like, formation of lights coming round the mountain. And I sort of stood there looking at it, thinking this has got to be some weird reflection of something. There was a formation of things coming around and going out across the sea and then disappearing.
Right.
And I thought, do I stand here and watch it or do I run in and tell people? And I stood there and watched it. And then eventually I ran in and told people. And there was nothing there by then, of course. and then, years later, on New Year's Eve, not that long ago, about 5 years ago, my dad was up
on New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, yes.
When people are famously drinking.
But that does come into it, but not in the way that you're implying, Richard. My dad, who had not had a drink that night, went up to bed, and up in my mum and dad's bedroom, you can see across the whole of Port Talbot. And he said he saw a light in the sky. And he was watching it. And again, my dad is not someone... I mean, my dad is a character, but he's not someone who would make this up. And he said he saw a thing in the sky with lights going around it.
Okay.
And it was there for ages, and then it kind of shot off. And he thought, well, there's bound to be something in the newspapers about that. And nobody did, because they were all pissed on New Year's Eve. And that's where that comes in. I think Port Talbot is some kind of hub.
Yeah. I mean, people in Port Talbot maybe haven't seen a helicopter before. Is that going to be that?
That is entirely possible.
Or a car. A car driving.
A car driving.
Driving along.
What the fuck is that, Dave?
And my other favourite thing you've done, and then there's a lot of favourite things of yours, but my absolute favourite thing you've done is when you played Wesley Snipes
in 30 Rock. Oh, there's only one Wesley Snipes.
No, there's not!
But it's so right, because Wesley Snipes should be called Michael Sheen and you should be called Wesley Snipes. It makes a lot more sense that way around. Wesley Snipes is not the right name.
No, for Wesley Snipes. Yeah.
Michael Sheen, yeah, I can see that.
Right, fair enough.
Wesley Snipes, bang.
Yeah, that was the joke.
Yeah. Explaining it for my audience who doesn't.
What was quite funny about that was that, so Tina Fey, who wrote it, asked me if I would do it, and I went along and did the first episode. And then she started writing the character sort of for me as I was doing it. And it just got weirder and weirder. And then she ended up asking me to play her husband or her ex-husband in a film called Admission that we did together. And then I met her husband, who does look weirdly like me. I leave that there.
Yeah, leave it there. It's a great show, though.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. She's genius.
Yeah, she is.
And that whole cast, by the time I was in it, I mean, it had done a lot of seasons by then, and they were just amazing. Yeah. They were absolutely amazing. And it is quite intimidating walking into something like that, because it's not my usual thing at that point. I've done a lot more of that kind of stuff now. But at that point, you walk in and you think, everyone's going to be like improvising, American improvising. And it was quite intimidating, but I really enjoyed it. Maybe that's why I got weirder and weirder, because I was so nervous when I first started doing it.
Good. Well, I want to talk to you about another role in another film. I think you're great in this film. I had a discussion with James Acaster about the film.
Right.
There's a couple of things I want sorted out about it, which is the film Passengers.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Which, A, you play a robot, so there's some stuff that I have to go into with about that. You're very good as a robot barman.
Thank you.
But it's a sort of slightly weird film in two ways, right? Mm-hmm. The major way is the slightly... Chris Pratt, he has...
One of the Chris brothers.
One of the Chris actors. He's the funny Chris actor. Yeah. He's the slightly different one.
Who's like you. He was quite large.
Yeah.
And then he became smaller.
And now he became a sort of sex symbol movie star.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. He's playing his character. He wakes up. They're flying a long way.
Yeah.
Suspended animation. He wakes up, and then he wakes up a lady. Played by Jennifer Lawrence.
Yep.
But he's woken up on purpose and basically condemned her to death before she can get to the place they're going to. But then it's played as a sort of kooky romance rather than... We sort of agreed it'd be better if she found out and then all the hell broke loose and he was a sort of bad character. I know you didn't write the film, so it's not... I'm interested in your take on it.
Yeah.
But it's sort of weird that he gets redemption after doing this thing, which is sort of murdering her.
Yes.
Very slowly.
Yeah. Interesting. So... That script
had
been around for, like, I want to say 10, 11 years or something. And I remember friends of mine, actresses who had been attached to it at one point or another, and you sort of go, why hasn't it ever got made? Like, it's been around for so long. And I just heard about it. I'd never read it or anything. And I'd heard kind of the basic premise of it. Couldn't understand why either a film like gets made or it doesn't get made and goes away. Like there are some scripts that just stay around. Shakespeare in Love was another one that was around for years and years and years and years. And it's often because they get people cast in the main roles and then one drops out or something happens with the casting of it and it just doesn't happen. And so when I read the script, it's funny, I didn't have that problem with it. It never occurred to me that would seem A, pervy, or B, just horrible.
Yeah.
It just sort of worked on the page. And then when we, after it was made, and people, and I heard people saying about that, I thought, oh, yeah. That is a bit messed up, isn't it? And I think the reason why it eventually did get made was because I think people must have been worried about that, and they thought, Chris Pratt, people love Chris Pratt.
They wouldn't mind being woken up by him.
Come on, it's Chris Pratt. And Jennifer Lawrence, people will understand. Jennifer Lawrence, of course you're going to wake her up. Of course you are. And I tell you what, we'll put that weirdo Welshman in there. Hopefully that'll deflect all the animosity towards him. So I think it was because they thought, well, here are two actors who can both, they have the star power, but they're also really, really likable. And I think they hoped that no one would notice.
Yeah.
But they did.
Well, I mean, retrospectively, it's okay because the ship was going to blow up if they weren't there to
That's
save
true.
It. So he saved her life, but he didn't know that when he woke her up in a creepy serial killer fashion.
And love will find a way, Richard.
Yeah. I don't think that's the message. No, I don't think that's the message to the creepy men out there who fancy someone who doesn't know they exist. Yeah, no, go and wake them up. It's fine. Go and not stare at them through a window until they love you back. That's the...
There's also a weird Shining thing going on in there, there as well. Which, again, you'd think, surely you'd want to stay away from the creepy guy in a hotel on his own. Ends up killing his family associations in a film that might have a few issues around...
I really enjoyed it. There's loads of really great things about it.
Yeah.
The other thing that me and James Acaster, it's nice, just nice to have someone from the film in. I'm never going to get Jennifer Lawrence, am I? Let's face it. So, but if I get the chance to put her in some kind of hypnol state, obviously I will bring her on. That was the message of the film, right? I'll just do the reverse passengers, knock her out, get her on, then she's here, then she has to do it, right?
Yeah.
That's the message of the film. Yeah. That's not my message. Why is Andy Garcia in it for 1 minute at the end?
You know, I have no idea. I think there is an entire other film that Andy Garcia thought he was making. And then he turned up at the premiere and was where am I?
It's really strange because you can't get away from the band. It's Andy Garcia.
You're like, oh,
you
my can't, God.
That's going to happen. This is
that's Andy Garcia. Where's this film going? Bye, Andy. It's not going anywhere. It's going exactly where we thought it was going. And Andy's going somewhere else. Funnily enough, I did a film called Kingdom of Heaven.
Yes.
Ridley Scott film. About, you know, crusaders and knights and all that kind of stuff. And at the premiere of it, Leicester Square, I'm walking along the red carpet.
Leicester Square Theatre. Did you go to the right place?
Yes.
Okay.
That time I did. And I'm walking along the red carpet, and Ridley Scott comes up to me, and he goes, hello, Michael. Just to let you know, you're not really in the film anymore. And I wasn't. I had to sit there with a big smile on my face all the way through it.
I was going to say at the beginning, that I was hoping to make this... I was hoping tonight would go well, and that then they would make a film... It's going all right so far, so it's good to get this halfway through. Good. That we could make a film of this called Herring Sheen, and I would like you...
Where are you going with this?
I would like you to play me in the film.
Okay.
We'll get Nish Kumar to play you. He was good to would you be up for that? And how would you go about... catching what I am. I know with Brian Clough, you kind of had to find, you know, I was talking to David Tennant in his Inferior podcast. I don't know who this guy is, doing interviewing better celebrities than I can get. You talked about how you realised he was sort of a member of a cult.
Like a cult leader, yeah.
So how would you go about getting into Richard Herring and being, what would the process be of getting into me?
I mean, it starts with the jumper.
Yeah.
I think I would spend a long time clearing stones. Mm. Because that's the way in, Richard. What I do is with all the characters I've played who are based on real people, the temptation is to immediately start trying to, like, copy them and speak like them and all that. And you have to resist, you have to resist that. I like to liken it to you take a warm bath yeah. in Richard.
Okay, I sum up.
Where you just completely immerse yourself in the person.
Yeah.
So watch everything, read everything you can, listen to everything. So in the case of, let's say, Kenneth Williams, Kenneth Williams wrote diaries, which was very handy because then I could he would say, oh, I was listening to this music or I watched this film or read this book and I really liked it. So I could do all of that. And slowly you start to kind of, it just sort of seeps into you. Mm-hmm. And then you start to try and see how it sounds and to try and get, like, you have to get below the surface. Now, with some people, there is nothing below the surface. Yeah. So that could then...
If you could have a choice at the parts Herring or Sheen in the film Herring Sheen,
yeah.
which would you prefer to play?
Definitely those? Herring.
Yeah.
Definitely. Don't want to play myself. That would be awful. No, I would like to... I'd like to get inside you, Richard.
Okay, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
My wife doesn't like it when I flirt with the guests. But, I think she might be okay with this one. It might be her thing. We had Matt Ford talking about Brian Clough, who was Matt Ford had been like a mascot, and he had bad eczema. And,
he told me about meeting Brian Clough. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the Brian Clough thing is extraordinary. It's a brilliant book and written, isn't it? And then
the book is very very dark. Yeah. It's very like angry and kind of alcohol fueled and. Because I don't know, for anyone who hasn't read the book, it's all inside Clough's head. So you get a kind of running commentary on his life. And he's so just bitter and angry and vengeful. And so Brian Clough's family were very against the book. They didn't like the book at all. And so when it was announced that we were doing a film based on the book, they were very against the film. And we tried to say, look, no, the film's not, you know, it's based on the book. It's based on those events, but it's not. Hasn't got that tone. It's going to be much more celebratory and much more a kind of a rounded, hopefully, portrayal of Clough. Mm-hmm. But they very much kept us at arm's length.
Right.
And which I was really sad about because, I mean, I understand it, but I was hoping that even after the film had come out, maybe there would be some kind of connection. Because, you know, you concentrate on playing someone like Clough, and I loved him. Really did genuinely kind of love him. And he's full of contradictions, and you know he could be very cruel at times, and could be nasty to people and stuff. But he was an extraordinary, a great man, I would say. And so afterwards, I really wanted to have some kind of sense of not approval, but some kind of validation, I suppose, from the family. But you know that didn't happen. Yeah. When we were filming it. So it's partly about his time at Derby and then also partly about his time at Leeds United. And when we were shooting the Derby bits, we were filming at, I think it was the oldest football ground in Britain at the time, Chesterfield, I think. And we were about to go up to Leeds and film at Elland Road and with all, you know, recreations of the Leeds team at the time and all that. And we got a message from Leeds United saying... We've been in contact with the players that are represented in the film, and they are not happy about this. So, unfortunately, you can't use the name Leeds United. You can't use the kit. You can't use any of the names of the players. And we'd already started filming. We were halfway through filming.
Yeah.
So we had to send like the writer Peter Morgan and the producer to go and meet the ex players and kind of say, look, it's not going to be a hatchet job on you. You're not going to look bad in it. This is absolutely celebratory. And eventually they agreed.
Yeah.
And then the opening 5 minutes of the film is footage of all those players being the dirtiest players in Britain. And there was a screening in Leeds. I didn't make that one. I think it was a near riot.
Yeah, but you know that's what it's such a dramatic, it's such a brilliant thing to notice the drama in the you know, it is.
Well, that's Peter Morgan's genius. So I did. So Peter did all the things that I played Tony Blair in, all three of them. He wrote Damned United. He wrote Frost Nixon. He's done The Crown recently as well. And he's brilliant in all kinds of ways. But his genius is for seeing drama somewhere that you'd never think there was drama. Like, who would have thought it would be interesting to do the Queen and Blair, or, you know, or even Frost Nixon. He just gets, like, oh, not only is that interesting dramatically, but it also gives the audience the thrill of kind of lifting the veil.
Yeah.
And see it. It's like seeing the wizard, you know, behind the curtain in Wizard of Oz. You get to see, that's what it's really like. And he has a brilliant kind of sense for that. And he definitely got that in with Clough. I remember him saying to me, because I got a bit pissed off, because I was saying, all the things we do, the other one is always the interesting character. Blair and Brown in the deal. Brown's the interesting character. The Queen's the interesting character. When am I... And he was like, I've got you one. Brian Clough. I thought, fair enough.
Yeah. That is good. Yeah. And they were horrible. I used to support Leeds in those days. And
yeah.
They were horrible. And, you know, and it's, that's just the fact that he was... Was he there for, like, 30...
42 days. Or yeah. Like 40-something days.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. It must be an early memory. It was quite in the early 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, 74.
Yeah. I saw him play against Bristol City. I was living down south by then.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Good, I'll ask you an emergency question to get me out of this weird hole I've dug myself into.
You didn't ask me about being a robot. You said you were going to dig into that.
Do you think would be cheating if I had sex with you when you were being the robot in Passenger? Only it'd be weird, because did you have a bottom... You didn't have anything down below.
I didn't have anything down there, no. I had to be strapped in to a contraption. I had a big steel rod up my back... And I was strapped to it.
Yeah. Tell me more.
Yeah. And and then there was this guy behind a computer desk, and he programmed the movements of the thing behind the bar. And it would just whiz around. Oh, wow. I'd be like, whoa. And I had to be strapped to this iron bar because when they whizzed me to the bar, I couldn't shake. Like, I had to stay really still. And and if someone was to get in the way of the track, dead. Because I had no control over the thing, the machine. It would just kill them.
I can't believe they can do that stuff with CGI now, can't they? They just said, well, let's get Sheen in and let's really give him a fucking roller coaster ride.
They CGI'd my... So yeah. I had to wear... When you do the CGI thing...
They didn't actually take your legs off.
They didn't take my legs off. You have to wear green...
Yeah.
A green outfit. Have you seen that thing where people wear a full green outfit and they look like Andy Serkis looking like... Kermit or something, you know, being Gollum. And so you have to wear green because then that they can use the green to put the CGI on. So I had to wear the Shining Bartender top off and then in stupid green leggings. And I'm walking on set every day, upper half, quite James Bond. Lower half, knob. And I had to walk on the set every day with Jennifer Lawrence, hoping to impress Jennifer Lawrence. Looking like an idiot.
Never mind. I'll ask you an emergency question. I was going to move on to something else. It's going to be... Oh, no, I'll do something in the back. I've got some new ones at the back. Relatively new back ones. Oh, I'm going to ask... Oh, no, I'll wait for that. What's your greatest weakness? That's what they were asking the Tory candidates yesterday.
Is that what they were asking?
What's your biggest weakness? It's a sort of job interview question.
Oh, if I see a field of wheat...
You have to clear all the stones out of it and put them around the sides. If few cats. But what I worry is that you'll come and see my stones one day and go, I could have built that much in a day. I've been doing it for months.
With my earring and my, my curly hair.
A brave new world, Richard.
It's good. No, I won't ask you that one. It's, I don't know you well enough yet. You know, I'm really disappointed because I'm on holiday at the moment.
In Devon?
Yeah. I'm not even here. This is a CGI...
Is this like, for David Lynch fans out there, is this like in Lost Highway, where that guy is both in the party in Hollywood, but he's also in the person's house?
It's very
answering
much
the
like
phone
that.
At the same time.
It's exactly that. I'm looking after my stupid fucking kids in Devon. Going on holiday with kids is the fucking worst thing. It's like... Being not, it's like being in your regular life, except you have to be with them all the time. They don't go away at all. It's much harder than just a normal day in your life. So I'm delighted to be here and to have escaped. But I got on my way here, I got an email saying, oh, Pointless Celebrities, which I've been on a couple of times, only I've mentioned it, and I've asked you to come on Wednesday with Michael Sheen.
Yes.
Did you ask?
I asked for you.
And so I kind of emailed my wife and said, I can't do this, I can't do that. So
because
I'm going back tomorrow to Devon, then I'd have to come back on Wednesday. If it was tomorrow, I think I would have done it.
I'll tell you my thought process.
Yeah.
They right, we're filming on Wednesday, who's available?
Yeah.
And I've heard you saying on this podcast that you're pretty much available all the time to go on quiz shows. And I thought, who would be fun? And who do I think has a range of knowledge
I think we'd
adjacent
win.
To mine?
I think we'd win together. You know music. You know about music, and I don't know.
So I said, Richard Herring or Adam Buxton.
All right. You've got Buxton. Is Buckley's doing
Buxton
it?
Wasn't in either.
Okay.
No, so it's me and Steve Pemberton.
Oh,
which
okay.
I'm actually quite, I'm very happy about.
You'll definitely win.
Yeah.
And I'll watch that. Oh, it
could have been me.
It could have been me. So
I was on The Chase the other day.
I know. Well, I was going to ask about The Chase. Well, let's talk about The Chase.
Okay.
And what I like about it is when the tabloids write about The Chase, they say all the people who are furious on Twitter with you.
So
people, they were furious with you for going for the low.
Oh, offer. They were furious with me.
Yeah, because you were offered $100,000.
Yeah.
$5,000 or $2,000. Went for $2,000. And the girl before you, the lady before you, had brought in £70,000.
That's right.
And you didn't even go for $5,000.
And let me remind you. Of the 21 points that we scored in the final round, who scored 17?
It doesn't matter.
Me. If I hadn't got back to the for the final round,
you would still have lost. You could have lost £170,000 instead of 70.
People who really know how to play the chase understand why I made that choice.
Yeah.
For you amateurs out there. Watch Pointless Celebrities.
He was playing. He was playing the Beast. He tried to do a Mr. Sheen joke at the beginning, which didn't work. And then there was a question about pie, which I knew would have got for you if I'd been on your team.
Yeah.
How many places to go? And then you said you look like you've had a lot of pie in your life.
Yeah, and people got upset.
Did they?
Calling Mark fat. So, hang on. The whole premise of the show is based on that he's fat. The first thing Bradley says every week is, oh, and Mark Labatt, the Beast, he's a fat fucker, isn't he? Sort of something, you know, but walshed up.
I mean, yours was witty, because it wasn't even that. So you'd know a lot.
And I thought I'd get in the spirit of the show and make a pie joke.
It was a good joke.
People were like, call him Mark fat. Terrible.
Do you still wake up? Because it was right down to sort of 10 seconds to go. You had a chance to pull one back. And you said Indonesia instead of Philippines.
Yeah.
Do you regret it? Do you still wake up at night thinking about it?
I don't, because I got 17 of the 21 questions right. So I don't think I'm the one who should be answering these critical questions.
Okay.
Talk to Martin Bell.
The people on Twitter... did say he did well in the last round, though. He made up.
People it is. I mean, it's a cliche,
but
it's a different thing when you're there, Richard. It's not the same as being in your living room. It's really not.
I'm going to be. Have you ever done Tipping Point? I'm doing Tipping Point in July.
Are you? Fantastic. My aim is to do every single British quiz show. That is my aim. I was going to suggest it to Comic Relief.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's too late now because I'm saying it publicly. I was going to see if in 1 year I could do every single British quiz show, but try to get away with no one knowing it's me. So I would go on in character, a different character, and then at the end of the year on Comic Relief, they would show the clips of me, and they would go, oh, my God, it was him. Chameleon Michael Sheen. And it would satisfy my slightly weird obsession with British quiz shows.
That would be good.
I would love to do Tipping Point. Yeah. Tipping Point is an interesting one, because the very first time I watched Tipping Point with Ben Shepherd, I thought, this is shit. This is the worst. This is just that thing in the fair that you used to do when you were a kid and got bored and walked away. Why is this a TV? I love it now.
Yeah.
I love it. Me and my mum watch it all the time. I get my mum to tape The Chase.
Yeah.
Celebrities, particularly pointless celebrities. Yeah. And now Tipping Point. I'd like to add Tipping Point to it.
Good. Well, have you got any tactics for me? Because it's working out where the
go up thing's going to fall. And
I'm looking forward to the conversation of going, because I'm just going to bench Shepherd every time he asks me where it's going to land. I'm just going to go, don't know yet. Well, let's see. It's gravity and it's random.
Did you? I think.
Just let's wait. Why are we talking about this? It's going to happen in a second.
Yeah. Let's just, you and me, then stand here enjoying each other's company until it comes
just
down.
Just watch it, it's happening.
Did you see Bob Mortimer on it?
I didn't.
I think Bob Mortimer had the same idea as me at one point and went, I'm going to be on every quiz show. Because he was on every quiz show for a while. He'd be like, Bob Mortimer's on it. And he was fantastic.
Yeah.
He was so good. So I love Tipping Point.
But it's quite rare to see, you know, you're a big Hollywood star. You don't have to do these kind of shitty shows.
I don't.
I mean, like this. Yeah. But even, you know, but someone like me, I love going on those.
I was on Poblacum the other day.
Okay.
That is Wales's Welsh language. Thank you. That is Wales's Welsh language soap opera. I turned up. I can't even speak Welsh. I turned up as a doctor for one scene in Poblacum. Because I can.
Okay. Well, I'm going to send you some of my scripts and you can be in some stuff.
Do you remember when Ian McKellen clearly went, I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm going to do pantomime and I'm going to do Coronation Street. Do you remember when he did that? Yeah. He went through that phase. I loved that.
But I love it too. I think I really like actors who, you know, because you're a very serious actor and you do the serious stuff really well. You do the comedy really well. But it's great to just show that I can do, you know, you can do all different types of stuff.
The main reason is because, so my daughter grew up in Los Angeles, in America, with her mum. And so I ended up living there to be with my daughter. And so I was forced, essentially forced, to have a career with integrity. Because I couldn't be here to do the stuff I actually wanted to do. Now that my daughter is old enough and has moved out, I'm here and I'm back, baby. Show me the quiz show!
Oh, dear. I love it. And Gage, you're on a panel show with...
With Alan Carr. Yeah.
It's unexpected, but you're very good on it. Impressions and...
Yeah, but I've only got... There's a small window, isn't there, where people go, oh, Michael Sheen. Very soon it'll be, oh, it's him again doing another one. Oh, yeah, how many more of these is he going to do? But, I'd loved it. It's great. We're doing another series.
Are you? Great. Yeah. Good. Because you've done loads of great... The comedy stuff is great as well, and I really love the League of Gentlemen film you were in. I mean, that Jeremy Dyson must have been so excited to have you play him.
Do you know the story of why Jeremy is the only one of the League who doesn't act?
I don't really know why.
It's not much of a story, but it's... So when they first started out, they were all at Leeds University together, and all four of them used to do the characters and all that. And then as it went on, Steve... Reese and Mark were like, Jeremy's not very good, is he? And so they had to have a word with Jeremy and go, we don't think you should perform anymore. You should just write. And I think Jeremy was like, I don't think I should do this anymore, or whatever. And so then when it came to doing the movie, they wanted to have Jeremy in it, and then they asked me.
Yeah.
Now, that was I was a massive League of Gentlemen fan. I just loved the show. So it was really weird, like someone going, I'm going to pick you up and put you in your favourite show. And so I had all the like the carrot tubs and stuff running around. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was both really exhilarating and terrifying at the same time to have these weird characters actually talking to you. It's a weird dream.
Yeah. I thought it was great. It didn't kind of break through in the way I expected it to do. But I actually thought it was unfairly,
overlooked. It's a brilliant idea. Yeah. I mean, they've always been... I mean, they're too good in a way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they're too clever and too... Like, it's not mainstream enough, I suppose. And then you could say that other people took bits of what they did and made them more mainstream and had more success. You could see it in lots of different things.
Yeah.
But they are the real thing. They're amazing.
Yeah.
And like casting David Warner. Time Bandits. Anyone else like Time Bandits? Yeah. David Warner in Time Bandits. Oh, come on. And all the things that he's done. He's amazing. And then they cast him. Their love of like British horror and genre stuff. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
So I loved that film, yeah. But I think it was a bit... I mean, anything that you can describe as a little Pirandellian, not necessarily going to break through into the mainstream.
Although they've sort of taken over now, TV between them, haven't they?
That's true.
Kind of carved it up and are doing fantastically well. So I think they'll be okay.
They'll survive.
They'll be all right.
And Steve's doing Pointless Celebrity Movie.
Yeah.
So he's doing all right.
If he has if he has that trophy, I've only tried three times. It's come on.
Have you not won yet?
Not one.
What was your bête noir? What was your Waterloo?
Just that every time the person I've been on with.
Just let you down.
Fucked it up.
Let you down.
And the third time it was my wife. So she was the best of the lot. Don't bring it up.
You know, funnily enough, I was thinking maybe you've got a similar thing going on for you doing Pointless as I've got, as I thought, with this show.
Right.
So the first time I tried to come and do this show,
didn't
work out. Nish ended up stepping in. Mm-hmm. And tonight, went to the wrong theatre.
Yeah.
Nearly didn't make it.
Yeah.
I thought, is this a bit like Final Destination? Or have you read or seen that Stephen King thing, 11-22-63?
Yes.
Where time itself tries to stop the main character from accomplishing his goal. I think you might have a similar thing going on with Pointless.
It could be, if I win it.
And you could have won it with me day after tomorrow.
And then that...
Devon has got in the way.
I'll tell you, I just wish I didn't have a family. I've never regretted... because I'd have hung out with you more. We could have become proper friends. I could have said, look, I've got the script I've got for you. I want you to take home and read it.
With any luck, there'll be a horrific car accident. Today.
Yeah.
Or tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, you can just have more kids, can't you? So that's the thing, you can just have some more.
I mean, I can see a lot of women in this audience. There's always Jennifer Lawrence to wait.
There is. I want to ask you very briefly, you were in Midnight in Paris.
I was.
Which is quite controversial in some ways, because what was it like being in the movie version of Goodnight, Sweetheart? did you feel... Do you feel bad about it?
I tell you what, when I shouted
on
my first day on set to Woody Allen, where's Nicholas Lyndhurst? He didn't know what I was talking about.
They've done it again. I've seen, actually, the new Goodnight Sweetheart film, which is yesterday. I went to a press screening of it. Nearly good, but it's like Richard Curtis lives in a universe where he doesn't realise everyone else has seen Goodnight Sweetheart.
it's a sort of good premise, though, isn't it?
It's a great premise, and I thought, actually, I'm going to like it.
Mm.
I'm going to overlook the fact that they're not going to do time travel and alternate universes properly, because if you change one thing, everything changes, right? So if you take the Beatles out and Coca-Cola out and Harry Potter out, which are none of these things exist in this universe, then everything's different. There's one thing, quite offensive at the end, that's a big difference again. Why is that thing different, but everyone else is the same? Once you change one thing... Go to Woody Allen and tell him this. Would you change one thing in the past? Then everything changes. So if you get rid of Coca-Cola, nobody on Earth is the same person as now.
Have we learnt nothing from Back to the Future?
Exactly. But even Back to the Future doesn't get it, but it's closest.
Let me tell you this.
Yeah.
Four days ago, I was standing in front of the clock tower in Back to the Future. That is the truth.
I'm in 1952?
No. There were five different versions of Michael J. Fox. Around, no, there weren't. I'm just going to take you back. I'm filming a scene for Frost Nixon at Universal Studios. And it was, and in fact, the scene's not in the film, ultimately. It was a scene where Frost is in his car, and he's in Savile Row picking up some shirts, getting his driver to pick up my shirts. And and the point of the scene was to show that Frost had a telephone in his car. He was the first man in Britain to have a telephone in his car. And that was the whole point of the scene. And got cut. Anyway, we filmed it.
Imagine if they cut you out of that whole film. Oh. Just in the, you're not in it.
On the red carpet. When I notice that it's just called Nixon. Yeah, so I'm filming this scene, and we filmed it at Universal because they had a back lot, you know, one of those, like, it was a New York street, but they made it look like London. And they'd said, oh, we'll just make it rain, and people will think it's London. And so we shot it in Universal, and in between takes, I got out of the car, stretched my legs, and I just walked down the little back lot, round the corner, came out into this square. I was like, this is Back to the Future. And it was. The entire square of Back to the Future, they've got it on the Universal back lot. Anyway, a few days ago, I was in LA to do some reshoots for a film called The Voyage of Dr. Doolittle, which is why I look like such an arse with my beard. We were shooting the reshoots on a soundstage right round the corner from the Back to the Future square, and I was just able to revel in it.
Yeah.
Because that is a great film.
That is great.
Is it Back to the Future 1 or 2? I think it's 2. Where he goes back to the future, and you see scenes from the first film with him now watching himself in the first... Is that still in the first film, or is it the second?
2.
That is 2. Oh, that is amazing. That is amazing. I say Godfather 2, the great sequels of all time. Godfather 2,
yeah.
Babe, Pig in the City,
yeah.
And Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
Beat that. Yes, Empire Strikes Back, of course. Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, there you go.
Tron Legacy.
Thank you. Anything else?
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
I didn't want to spoil my memories of the first. I know. The original.
Did you love
Tron?
The first one? Oh, you're a year older than me.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I was like 7, 8.
Yeah, I'm about a year and a bit older than you, I think.
Yeah. That was the first film I ever saw. My uncle took me to see it in the cinema in Neath, and it was the first film I ever saw that when I came out, I still felt like I was in the film. You know, when you kind of have that thing, I'm in that world. I loved that film. And so then doing the sequel was so amazing. Like, being with Jeff Bridges, I played, you know, the arcade game that it's all sort of based on, that he plays in the film, the first film. They found the arcade, because Jeff said that when they made the first film, they had that arcade game in like a little green room area. So in between takes, they would all play that game.
Right.
And what's it called? Like Space Paranoids or something? Space? I can't remember. Anyway, they had that arcade game one day, and I played it with Jeff. And he is absolutely, like, there are people that I've met, on the whole, people I've, like, they say don't meet your heroes and all that. On the whole, everybody I've met who has been a bit of a hero has surpassed themselves. I've never been let down, apart from Laurie Anderson. I've never been let down by them. And Jeff Bridges is absolutely everything you would want Jeff Bridges to be. He's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Oh, good.
You just sort of love him.
All right, I'll watch it then.
Yeah.
I'll watch it then. I will not watch any of the Twilight films, though. So I refuse to do that for you. Look, we haven't talked about loads of things, and we haven't got much time. And I wanted to talk to you about, because I think there's, we had David Morrissey on the last series, and you know, I think again, a sort of an actor sort of turning 50 into his 50s, and it's happened to you as well, haven't you? Sort of reassessed your life a little bit and where you are in the world, and it's kind of quite interesting. You've sort of returned to your community of Port Talbot and done lots of things within the community there. Which is all very admirable, apart from certain people on the internet who would criticise you either way, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They'd either go, oh, he's a big Hollywood star and he never goes back to Port Talbot. Oh, he's a big Hollywood star and he's gone back to Port Talbot, but he lives in a big mansion drinking champagne. But it's interesting what's... I was interested in David about it, but I just was interested in talking to you about what's driven you, because you were very successful very quickly as an actor, and everything sort of just opened up for you, and you didn't really have any of that disappointment or waiting or any of those things really with acting. It was just straight in, and you were playing Hamlet and you were playing Amadeus and you were playing Caligula and all on stage, and then going on to this film and TV career, and then to make that decision to, you know, not leave it behind. And I kind of wanted to hear it from you, because I know there's been lots of interviews that misrepresent what's happened and why you've done it. But it's obviously that slight middle-aged thing of I want to kind of reconnect with my past and where I came from and see the UFOs, maybe.
I suppose, yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, it feels like... it can't be a coincidence that I, like, get to middle-age and then sort of change kind of what I'm doing. I suppose that must be what it seems like. And that has to be a factor. But it's also circumstances. Like I said, my daughter getting to the point where she left home and she's gone off and having a life, that sort of freed me up in a way. And that happened around the same time as I was doing a TV series in America that came to an end. And I'd started sort of getting more and more involved in non-acting stuff. I never quite know what to call it. If you call it activism, my bum goes in and out. It makes me feel a bit... Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's not really politics, and I don't really know what it is. It's just not acting stuff.
Yeah.
And so, funnily enough, when you say, like, I was, in very general terms, successful very early. I left drama school a little bit early to do a play in the West End with Vanessa Redgrave. Mm-hmm. Not a bad start. But I always used to say that I would still do this even if I was doing it in the streets in Port Talbot. I would be just as happy. And there was always that kind of attitude a little bit. And then eventually I did do it in the streets in Port Talbot, and that was a big turning point in my life. When in 2011, I did a thing called The Passion in Port Talbot, and I'd worked on it for about 2 or 3 years, and it was with the community, and it took place all over the town, and it was like one non-stop performance for 72 hours in the town over the Easter weekend. And in the development of that, over the 2.5 years or whatever it was, I did spend more time back at home than I'd ever spent. I mean, I was always back and forth there with seeing my family and everything. But I spent more time there than I ever had, and I had a completely new kind of perspective on the community that I grew up in, and not just the community I grew up in, but community. And I saw, I sort of went and met all the different organisations and charities and support groups and stuff in the town, because I wanted to kind of get a sense of the work that people were doing in the town to help other people. Because it's sort of a long story, but it was basically a version of the Easter story. I'm not religious myself, but I used that as a kind of a template. And it was a modern story about the town of Port Talbot, but using the kind of story of Jesus and the Passion as a kind of a way for people to kind of know what was going on.
I mean, he had a bad enough time the first time. Don't bring him back in Port Talbot.
I know. And a key to it was, for me, was that the stuff that he's always seen as doing, there are people doing every day in communities all over the country and all over the world. And so I wanted to sort of do a story about that. And so I met all these people and these organizations, and I, for the first time, had a real sense of, A, the incredible work that people are doing, and that they don't get any pay, and they don't get any support, and they don't get any, you know, they're not on the front pages of newspapers and all that kind of stuff, but they're doing the things of getting their hands dirty and doing the real work of community. And I realized it was getting, like, every time I went back, so I would go and work in the town for a bit, then I'd go away for a couple of months, then I'd come back and work again. And every time I came back, something else had gone. Something else had disappeared. Like, there was a woman whose son had died. Actually, her son was in my class in school, and I remember when he died when we were 11. It was a horrible accident. And I met her, And she said that she'd rented a little room in a local centre, and she was the only person offering grief counselling because she had gone through it herself and there was no one there for her. And so she had started doing this grief counselling. And then I went away and I came back and it wasn't there anymore because the money for that little room in that community centre had been cut. And I kept noticing this all the time. So on the one hand, I got more and more of an appreciation of the work that people were doing. And on the other hand, I got more and more of a sense of more and more was being cut. You know, and it was, and the council budgets were being cut. Not, and inevitably, I didn't mean to be political. It was just unfair.
Yeah.
It's unfair. And you know, that wasn't happening in other communities that I would be filming in. For instance, like when I was filming Good Omens, we filmed a lot in Oxfordshire. Amazing communities. They're beautiful. And I would go from one, literally down the motorway to the other, and go, "Hang on a minute, that's not right. That's David Cameron's constituency, and they're all lovely there, and they have a lovely time. And then back at home where I come from, they have a shitty time a lot, you know. It's not fair." And so it sort of came out of that. And I got more and more involved with those things after we finished The Passion, stayed in touch. And eventually I thought, I don't want to just turn up and have a photograph taken or put my name on something. I want to, you know, I've got more that I can do. I've been very lucky. I've earned money. I've got kind of access to media, and people want to interview me about stuff. And I've got, you know, and I care about this stuff, and I feel still connected, you know. I feel like I've got access to be able to go and talk to people in Westminster and be in someone's front room on Sandfield's estate in Patel. You know, there's a potential channel of information there, and these are the people who know what's really going on, and yet these are the people who are making the decisions, and that doesn't seem right. And so they need to be connected up a bit, and people will listen to me now and again until I fuck up. So like I say, the circumstances of my life where suddenly I didn't have to be in America, I didn't have to, you know, my daughter was doing her own thing and I didn't have to be there, and it all just sort of came together. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, either I take a step forward here or I have to take a step back, because there's too much. It's just too much otherwise. I can't do both things. And so I decided I would take a step forward. So I, at that point, decided that I would now, the acting would be there to support the other stuff. Because I felt, again, I was in a fortunate position to go, well, people offer me stuff. I don't have to really audition anymore. And there's enough work for now. And that window won't be open always. Mm-hmm. But for this period of time, there is enough work for me to not have to worry about that side of it. And so let that support the other stuff for now. And so that's what I decided to do.
No, it's great. Really, and also, it's just, that's all it takes, isn't it? It just takes, like, one person in each community to be that conduit. And we sort of live in a world where that just doesn't... I think even, like, in the old days, the Lord of the Manor would have gone, I'm clever enough to go, every now and again I'm going to throw a big party or, you know, do some stuff for other people so that they don't notice that I've got all the money. but, like, it seems like now that that's, you know, that doesn't happen, that people aren't as community-minded. And I know, like, Wales has that community and has been through... you know, that South Wales has been through so much, and people have been through so much together that they're still
there.
Well,
and going through it again now.
Yeah.
You know, Ford just declared they were closing in Bridgend. The steelworks in Portalbert, we still don't know what's going on with that. These are the things that were kind of, that took over from the old mining industry and the heavy industry in the area. And, you know, those are under threat now again. And it's really scary at a time when budgets have been cut and cut and cut every year for, you know, many years now. It's really frightening what's going to happen to the communities again.
And it's weird that, but I think, like, see, if an actor does it, people go, you're an actor, stop, you know, just be an actor, why are you doing this, why are you putting your nose in? But then if Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, go, it's all right, forget he was a reality TV star, he's allowed to be president. I mean, you're allowed to be interested in your own community or whatever you want to be interested in, but it's sort of interesting that's what you're doing is sort of exceptional and newsworthy is sort of odd, isn't it?
It might be, because I understand why people are suspicious of celebrities doing that stuff, because fair enough. you should be. We should be suspicious of anyone who's sort of saying that they're trying to do that kind of stuff. I mean, great if it's the results.
Yeah.
Does it? Do you? You know, the things that you realise are, once you start working in those sort of areas, are that people go, well, how long are you going to be around for? Is this just something you're doing for a couple of weeks? Like, are you just into this for whatever reason, or are you here for the long haul? And I think it does have to be in the results. Like, Are you really going to do it? And the thing I think what's not exceptional, but the thing that's unusual is the things that I do are really boring. They're not like glamorous. I end high cost credit. Not really, not many people interested in that outside of the people who work in that area. You know?
Yeah.
It's not the glamorous stuff. And I think people are surprised, like, why are you doing this? So I think I'm not at all worried by people saying, being suspicious of your motives and, mm-hmm. and whether you're doing it. Like, you have to really, you know, get into it and commit time almost more than anything, mm. I think. So that's fair enough. I totally understand that.
No, it's terrific. And, you know, it's clearly something you feel strongly about. So it's,
of course,
you know, it's
the people in Talbot are sick to death of me. Nobody wants me to do any of that stuff. It's just me forcing them.
And do you feel, is it a middle-aged thing? Is it real? Is it connecting back to your childhood somehow? Or is it just, you know, I've had a nice life? You know, I mean, you haven't, because it was saying, oh, there was the news reports where you'd given up acting to fight fascism.
I was going to fight Nazis in Selma, yeah. Michael Sheen turns his back on Hollywood to fight Nazis in Wales. I mean, there's a film in that.
Yeah.
Michael Sheen, Nazi hunter.
What are you doing in Port Talbot? I don't know. Let's start somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I think it was a combination of things. Circumstances. Definitely a kind of reconnection to where I came from. You know, like I said, I've never, even though I've lived away, I'm always there. I'm back and forth all the time. And I think there is a kind of cyclic thing I'm certainly noticing. I don't know if you are around this age where you start to kind of, those things that I was into, I think I talked about this on David's thing, but those things that I was into when I was a teenager that I thought were just on the way to being interested in other things, oh no, they're really meaningful to me, like they really matter to me, they've been important parts of my life. And I think there's something like that going on about, you know, you come back. I never thought I would live in Port Talbot again, you know, I never thought that would happen. Not that I've got anything against it, but I just didn't think that would happen. Yeah. And there's something about returning home and going back to where you came from and the things that shaped you and the things that made you care about the things that you do. There is definitely something in that. And there's also definitely something in just being the middle-aged thing. Because at a point where I was starting to think, oh, my God, it's downhill from here, isn't it? But, you know, I really felt like I'm not a young guy anymore and all that. And started to get a bit worried about mortality and all that kind of stuff. Suddenly, I had a whole new lease of life, like a whole new kind of, I don't think of it as a career, but certainly, you know, I was doing different things. I was focusing on things and thinking about things that I wasn't my in my wheelhouse. It certainly wasn't my comfort zone. And that really did kind of invigorate a lot of things for me. So definitely that was part of it as well.
No.
And so my stone clearing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very silly. Don't talk it up. But it's but you still are acting, obviously. We haven't got much time to talk about anything else, but Good Omens is... I love the double act with you and David. It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I love that... that basic question of good and evil and it's sort of Milton, really, isn't it, about why would the devil do this stuff if he must know what... He's read the Bible as well. He must know what's coming. He's sort of helping the things...
What's brilliant is... I think there's loads of things that are brilliant about Good Omens, but... That Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett wrote the book, that they're dealing with really big, complicated themes, but in such a kind of stupid and funny and lovely way that you don't notice that actually there are major philosophical things being explored in it. And they just do that brilliantly, and I love that. It was a real pleasure to be in that and to work with David. Because usually it's funny you say, like, he's the Scottish you, but me and David would be up for the same parts, usually. Sure. We're never in things together, because there's usually one hole that is our shape, and only one of us fits in it, you know what I mean? So to have both of us in something was great. And you never know quite how it's going to go, but just from the beginning, we just sort of clicked, really.
Yeah. And do you think you'll work... Because that's a done deal, isn't it? There's not going to be a series two of...
Well, there's only one book.
Yeah.
I think because it has done very well, there's lot of pressure on Neil to do another one. But he's always said that he wouldn't. But, you know, when that cheese comes to calling.
Well, it's very good. I mean, his War of the Worlds is superior to yours. So I just want to start seeding that in. The music isn't as good, though. So, you know, I'm torn. Yeah. I'm torn. Look, it's been. I'm so glad you've come, and it's a real honour for me to have you here. I hope you'll come again, because there's loads more I didn't talk to you about. I've got some scripts backstage for you to look at. If any acting roles come up, they don't have to be about men who go to prostitutes and are perverted, but just you can feel free to give me a ring, or okay. Pointless.
There's a lot of quiz shows we have to do yet.
And thanks for forgiving me about the tomato ketchup, which I was worried about. ladies and gentlemen, it's Michael Faheen.
Thank you. You have been listening to Rahula Stubber with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Michael Sheen. Thank you to Best for playing this music. Thank you to King's Place for putting us up and letting us record in their venue. I think we paid them something, but they were still very nice. Thank you very much to everyone at GoFaster Stripe and everyone at Acast, etc. The executive producer of this show is Andy Sandel. I've been indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. This is The Fuzz, GoFasterStripe.com and Sky Potato Production. Head to rahulastapa.co.uk for more information about this podcast. You're welcome. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.